Hi, it's John Williams. It's 9:11 on WGN Radio. So good morning again to you. Bob Surratt said, well, what was your slip and fall? What was your traffic? What was your ice story from the weekend? Friends of mine did slip and fall, and I nearly did this morning. I don't know if you've been out there yet, but don't trust those sidewalks. Don't trust that ice. Don't trust that spot. There's black ice. There's crunchy ice. We have all of the fruit flavors are represented in Chicago today, and they'll get you if you are not careful. So be cautious as you go. It kept my train from coming in last night. I was at the New Buffalo Airbnb that Brenda and I go to sometimes over the weekend. I usually try and travel to New Buffalo during the worst winter weather weekends of the year. I did it last year during the polar vortex. This year I was at the New Buffalo train station ready at 10:40 for the train to arrive. Actually, we were supposed to arrive at 10, and then because of the time change, I was supposed to get in at 10:40. So it's about an hour and 40-minute trip, but you pick up an hour. So you leave at 10, you get in at 10:40 Central Time. I got in at quarter after midnight. Amtrak does a lot of things well, but some things they don't do so well. I'm not going to hold them responsible for the weather, but I'm not sure that was the only reason they were running behind. Anyway, we get in at quarter after midnight last night. I'm all by my lonesome, and I think, now how am I going to get home? I could do a Uber or something like that, but I like not to. I like to grab a cab. I came out. There was another 15 cabs waiting for us again at 12:15 this morning at Union Station downtown.
Was it the karaoke dude again?
It was not the karaoke cab.
Oh, no.
I did not call karaoke cab. I was in no mood to karaoke cab.
Oh,
I'll tell you that, Mary Vandeveld.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
What was wrong with the weather last night?
The train was coming from Detroit, and then prior to that, probably out east. And I, to be honest with you, don't know.
Yeah.
Maybe it didn't have anything to do with the cold weather and some of the snow.
Maybe ice on the track or something.
But I did want to do a shout out to the guy, my cab driver. I get in. And he's one of these like East African guys. He has kind of a clipped accent. And he looks up at me and he says, I'm talking to my wife. And I said, okay. He says, is that okay with you? Do you mind if I continue to talk to her? And I thought, holy cow, I don't know of a cab who's ever said, I'm not going to be a distracted driver. And do you mind if I just finish this conversation? And he did. And then he said to me, the guy that's working the cab stand in front of Union Station on a cold, wintry January night at 12:15 in the morning is the nicest guy. He's a Chicago police officer. And he said he is so positive and nice to the passengers. And he's organizing the cabs. And he's verbal. And he's saying, hey, hold on a second. And when you're crossing Canal Street or Madison, wherever you're crossing down there, he's holding up the cars with his hands, even though you have the right of way. Maybe the cars don't know. He's just so proactive and positive and friendly. And he said he's the nicest cop and he's good to us cab drivers and he organizes us and we just love him. And nobody knows his name, but he's just busting his butt. And I said, well, cops are there to serve and protect. And I don't think we always appreciate the serve part when they do a good job of it. He said, that's exactly what I'm trying to tell you, man. Man would be he didn't say man.
Jamaican.
Yeah, I know. He was, and I don't think he was from Jamaica. But he just had this charming accent, and he was so sweet. And I really liked him. I said, well, did you get the name of the cop that's doing the good work down there in front of Union Station? He said, no, I don't know his name, but he's there a lot, and he's a good man. So hooray to both of them.
So is he is an on-duty Chicago police officer?
Yes. Yeah, he had a vest on. And I don't know if he worked for Amtrak or Metro or Union Station, you know, or if he was just, I think he was just CPD.
Okay.
And he was just out there working positively. I think if you had that shift at 12:15 in the morning waiting for the Wolverine train to come in late, you could not be such a happy, helpful person, but he was both. So hooray for all of us. We were talking about the NFL playoffs over the weekend, and Dave Ennett came up with the following consolation for Bears fans. I said to Dave off the air, could it get any worse for the Bears? Not only are they not in it, not only did they have a bad season, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, but Patrick Mahomes just keeps on playing well, keeps on playing like, oh, don't you wish you had one of those? And then Dave had the following cheery nugget. Dave?
Oh, you mean about the win total?
Yeah.
Well, last year, the 49ers only won 4 games. This year, the Bears won 8. So if you project, I mean, the 49ers went from winning 4 games, they've now won 15. The Bears won eight. So they're already ahead of the 49ers pace. See where I'm going? Of course, Garoppolo was hurt last year.
That's the best you got.
But he only threw eight times yesterday.
That's the best you got.
Yeah,
Mahomes only threw eight times?
No, Garoppolo for San Francisco, because Raheem Mostert ran all over the Green Bay Packers.
Yeah, yeah.
Who also used to be on the Bears.
Yeah, but just for a minute.
I'm trying to put a...
Practice squad.
I'm trying to put a little icing on this very sad cake. So if you just have any other, you know, on the bright side, Bears commentary, just call or text it in. Hey, John, yeah, but, you know, but on the... And for instance, Dave, ask me for some good news about the Bears.
Hey, John, how about some good news about the Bears?
Well, last year, the 49ers only won four games. That's really sad if that's all we've got. We can do better than that, is what I'm saying. 312-981-7200. You know who did better than that? Patrick Kane. Let's just give it up one more time for the guy that scored his 1,000th point for the Chicago Blackhawks.
Picked off by Gustafson, left point. Put it down to Kane, back of the net. He sent it in front. Carpenter to size, and he scores! And Patrick Kane has a 1,000 NHL points! He'll get the second assist on this goal, and the Blackhawk players are all off the bench to skate down to the corner and mob Patrick Kane.
So glad that happened at home. So glad Taves said everybody out, and they all charged the ice and gave him a celebration.
That was very cool.
And the team won, and they're playing well.
I'm glad that Kane wasn't smothered at the bottom of that.
Were it the Bears, he'd be injured when he got up out of the scrum. But no, he's okay. He survived the celebration of his 1,000th point. So props to him, props to them, and let's go Blackhawks. Meanwhile, the Cubs had their convention over the weekend. You and I talked about this last week.
Mm-hmm.
Laura Ricketts said last week that she doesn't think that the family, she thought they should, but that they weren't going to do a Ricketts session where the fans got to ask him questions because it was quote-unquote the lowest rated. But Tom Ricketts was there as the owner of the team and representing the family, and he did talk, right? So
he did.
And Ricketts, so here's Tom Ricketts on stage at his Cubs convention.
What our promise for the next 10 years is to continue to have the best relationship with our fans of any sport in the world, any professional sports team in the world. And that starts with the Marquee Network. The Marquee Network. What do you have against the Marquee Network? Believe me, you won't be booing about that in a year. You guys won't. You won't be booing about the Marquee Network in 1 year.
So many things wrong in such little time. First of all, he said we are going to have the best relationship with our fans of any professional organization in sports. That's a metric that I don't think fans think about or care about. That's an ego thing for the Ricketts. I don't know, maybe for the board. But that's just a dumb point to try and prove to a hostile crowd that you know is mad at you. Did he think that his words were going to work?
Wait, but you called it a hostile crowd. Who goes to the Cubs convention?
Cubs
fans. These are your most loyal, diehard fans.
You know, if you can't, the silence was deafening. But then he doubles down because he had to feel the room. So then he thinks, okay, but I've got this Marquee card up my sleeve. The Marquee Sports Network, that's going to help? So then he says, what have you got against Marquee? How much time do you have? Nobody has anything good to say about Marquee except the people that are working for Marquee. And it'll be fine. It'll be fine. This is all just of the moment. We'll all watch it, and they'll have fine shows, and there's good people they've hired, and it'll be swell. You're going to love it. But today you don't. And by the way, those fans, who are the Cubs' most ardent supporters, are also, rightly, its most vested critics. These are the people that really do feel like they have skin in the game.
Right.
They paid money to go there in January, for crying out loud. So yeah, they got a beef. And he says, what have you got against Marquee Sports? Oh my God, we don't have anything good about Marquee Sports. First of all, we can't get it. Dude, Can we just play that clip one more time, Producer Elif? This is how not to do everything he just did.
What our promise for the next 10 years is to continue to have the best relationship with our fans of any sport in the world, any professional sports team in the world.
That's number one.
And that starts with the Marquee Network.
That's number two.
The Marquee Network.
Here comes number three.
What do you have against the Marquee Network?
Here it is, number three. That's three boo-boos in 30 seconds.
You won't be booing about that in a year.
Oh, good. Listen to that.
You won't be booing about the Marquee Network in 1 year.
You got everything but let's get him coming from that crowd.
It doesn't start with the Marquee Network. It starts with your the connection with the fans, which you've had for forever. Between Cubs fans and you've got it built in. People, your fans love that team, right? So it doesn't have anything to do with the Marquee Network. It's a love affair.
Here's what the Marquee Network at its base is: a way to watch the games mm-hmm. that you used to be able to watch for free, but now you're going to have to pay for. And by the way, most of Chicago can't even get it yet. There's no guarantee that you will before the first exhibition game.
Well, they've got to try to avoid what the Dodgers went through. And they have to get a deal with Comcast. But you know, my sense is, remember the Big Ten Network went through this in their early days.
Oh,
they didn't have a deal with Comcast, and everybody's worried, you know, here's this great new network, and no one's going to be able to see it. But they worked it out, and they got a deal done. Now, maybe this is different. I don't know. But at some point, we're all going to watch it, and it'll be a kind of part of life.
I want to say this about Tom Ricketts, in case you're listening, Tom. This one's for you. I admire the courage of a person who faces his fiercest critics and mm-hmm. says, hey, so if you're a Democrat and you go to a gun rally, or if you're a Republican and you go to an immigrant rally, you know, I mean, just pick a crowd that might not be so primed to take what you're selling, and then you make your case. I do think that's the responsibility of the Ricketts. I would have been maybe even more critical if they didn't face their fans. But I don't think he chose the right words. I don't think he had the best talking points. I don't know what those would have been, but I don't think those were them.
I think Marquee Network will be fine. I think people will get used to it. They got used to when they started whatever it was, Sports Vision or Sports Channel,
yeah.
and put a bunch of games there, and
yeah.
it was all new, but today we don't even think about it.
By the way, I believe ESPN's very first broadcast, it wasn't a hit when ESPN first heard the array. What was the first game that ESPN showed? Was it the Bulls-Lakers? Was it the Super Bowl?
No.
What was the first thing ESPN brought to the world?
It wasn't Australian rules football?
It was kind of like that. Elif, you'll have to look this up. I believe it was a women's softball game, a women's college softball game. This is the Entertainment Sports Network, bringing you the finest in sports across our land. Here's Auburn taking on the Texas Tech Ladies. Guys, take it away. That was, my estimated probability of accuracy of that is 64%.
We'll
double check.
I made the point earlier that, and Bob said something about the fact, well, people are going to have to pay for this. Well, but you pay now. You pay if you have cable, unless you've cut the cord, you paid to watch
NBC.
The Chiefs and the 49ers win yesterday. And you pay to watch This Is Us.
Well, but I don't know. In my mind, sure, I'm paying for the cable and I'm paying for whatever package I'm getting, but my understanding is, we'll see how this goes, that the package I'm going to get will include a $5 to $10 upcharge per month for the games. Brett wanted to jump in here. Hey, Brett, you're on WGN. What can we do for you?
Hey, John, I think what he should have said was, he wants his relationship with the fans to be better. He should start spending money and get players here. They try to get under this luxury tax, and he keeps saying that they don't have any money.
They can spend over the level. They just have to pay tax, yeah.
They're getting billions of dollars from this Marquee Network. Their money's already in the bank from them.
So, you're cutting, yeah, keep going. But you also told my producer he should have said the relationship is going to get stronger as we go to the World Series. People
correct.
Love that.
Correct. That means that you get players in, you spend money on players, or you start rebuilding this farm system to get back.
Yeah, I think you're making some good points there, my friend. When I get to be King Brett, I'm going to appoint you the Cubs speechwriter. You just put that on a little index card and slide it over to the Ricketts. I think things will go better.
Jolene, 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 Jolene.
9:41.
I'm begging of you, please don't take my man.
Did you ever do this? We're talking about Patrick Mahomes and the Kansas City Chiefs over the weekend, how well they played, and then at the end of the game, they threw up a shot of Andy Reid. And so I did this to myself yesterday. I thought, okay, the Chiefs won yesterday, and their coach is Andy Reid, which makes me think of the actor Wilford Brimley, because I think he looks like Wilford Brimley.
Yeah, that's been said.
And then I thought, as I was thinking about Wilford Brimley, I thought about the movie Cocoon, in which he starred. Which made me think about Tawny Welch, because Tawny Welch was in that movie, which made me think of her mother, Raquel Welch. So I'm sitting there thinking about Raquel Welch, and that made me think of celebrities who've aged really well. And when I thought about that, I thought about Dolly Parton, who yesterday turned 74.
Jolene, 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 Jolene.
So the Kansas City Chiefs win yesterday. Put this song in my head all day long. That's called a rabbit hole. I don't think I'm the only one that does this sort of thing. You're sitting there with your laptop, and you go, who's that guy that he looks like? Andy Reid. Oh, yeah, Andy Reid looks like, oh, yeah, Wilford Brimley. What was he in? Cocoon. And the next thing you know, you're singing Jolene to Dolly Parton. This is how having unlimited information at a touch doesn't serve us well.
No.
You know, it's like you can find out anything, but maybe, and sometimes those are fun, sometimes they're pleasant, sometimes they're fruitful, a lot of times massive waste of time. There's, you know, but there you are. And I sometimes enjoy, if you have the time, those travels down the rabbit hole. So that's where I was yesterday. That's where I was today. By the way, we asked before the break, we were talking about the Marquee Sports Network, how Tom Ricketts got booed at the Cubs convention at the very mention of it. And you said, look, the Big Ten Network didn't get off to a splendid start. People were anxious about would their locality have the – would we get the Big Ten Network
right
in Chicago? What would it cost?
Mm-hmm.
And I assure you that once Marquee gets up and running, a couple of years from now, we'll have forgotten about all of this and we'll be just fine with it.
Yeah.
I remember that ESPN, when it first started, it didn't go off like a bang. It was a very slow, gradual start. In fact, producer Elif, what was the very first game that ESPN broadcast?
The first broadcast game on ESPN was the 1979 American Professional Slow Pitch Softball World Series, where the Kentucky Bourbons beat the Milwaukee Schlitz 15-5.
That's no Super Bowl, Jack. That's the Kentucky Bourbons over the Milwaukee Schlitz 15-5. That was the first game broadcast. It says slow pitch, so it was probably not women's, but I did remember it was a I thought it was a women's softball game, but it was a softball game.
Now I'm going to go into a rabbit hole looking up Milwaukee Schlitz.
Yeah. Yeah. That's not that deep a hole, actually.
So I don't want to brag, but I think my 64% accuracy is looking pretty good right now, isn't it? The story in so today is just a weird day because a lot of things are closed. Our best to you and yours. We should reflect on the meaning and value of Martin Luther King, the civil rights movement, on MLK Day. Tomorrow will be a big day in America as the Senate trial for the president gets underway. And yet the thing that was also percolating on my phone a lot last night and early this morning is the screenshot of Jennifer Aniston and Brad Pitt exchanging loving glances at each other. Here's the way CNN reported their glance, their touch, their possible reunion at the SAG Awards. Quote, "This is why we can't have nice things. It started during the show, particularly as Pitt accepted his award for outstanding performance by a male actor in a supporting role for Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. He gets the award. He goes up and gives a speech, which was so fun. In fact, let's catch up on the forecast and some business here. Let me play for you some of Brad Pitt's speech. It was just delightful. And then what happened afterwards has America talking. Illinois will no longer, this in the Chicago Tribune the other day, Illinois will no longer suspend the licenses of drivers who fail to pay parking tickets. What a good idea. I mean, who are we kidding? Why was that ever a good idea? Illinois will no longer suspend the driver's licenses of drivers who fail to pay parking tickets and other fines beginning July 1st. The governor signed this into law on Friday. The Secretary of State's office will also automatically reinstate the driving privileges of roughly 55,000 people who had their license suspended over unpaid fines and fees related to moving violations. You know, if you want people to pay their fines and fees, they got to make money. The way you make money is you get in your car and you go to a job. If you say, well, you can't drive anymore, then you're cutting off your nose to spite your face. I know that you get angry at people who don't pay their fines, and we say, I'll teach you a lesson, Bucky. We'll take away your driver's license. You got to come up with something else. That's the dumbest thing we've done. This, to me, sounds like a fix that was needed for a while. I'm not exactly sure how all of that is going to happen if you had it previously suspended, or maybe you have a fine due. We'll talk about that in the 10 o'clock hour this morning here on WGN Radio. By the way, also, I got to do the LifeLock. Oh, here it is. Okay. Thanks, all. Then we'll get to that Brad Pitt speech, which was so fun. More than 26 million customers had their DNA information and databases maintained by the four leading DNA testing companies. Are you one of them? But DNA testing companies may be as vulnerable to data breaches as any other company, and DNA information could be a tempting target for hackers who could sell this information on the dark web, or it could be exposed to insurance providers or law enforcement agencies. It's important to understand how cybercrime is affecting our lives. Identity theft is another serious issue. Someone's identity is stolen every 2 seconds. You could miss certain identity threats if you're only monitoring your credit. Good thing there's LifeLock. If there's an identity theft problem, their agents will work to fix it. No one can prevent all identity theft or monitor all transactions at all businesses. LifeLock can see threats that you might miss on your own. Join now. Save up to 25% off your first year with the promo code LifeLock. Just call 1-800-LIFELOCK or click on LifeLock.com. Either way, say or use the promo code LifeLock for 25% off. Now, that's a swell deal. So they had the SAG Awards the other night. Dave, did you vote in the SAG Awards?
I did.
You did. Did you vote for Brad Pitt in the category of Best Supporting Actor?
I would have to go back and look at my ballot.
That was a stacked category. That was I think the male categories were pretty tough. Here's the Marianne Garvey piece in CNN. This is why we can't have nice things. She's upset that the world is trying to get Brad and Jennifer Aniston back together again. They were married for 5 years, from 2000 to 2005. When Brad Pitt went up to get his award, he said the following.
I got to add this to my Tinder profile. Thank you, my brothers, my sisters. This means so much, more than I can possibly fathom. I want you to know I watch everything. I watch you all, and the work has been mesmerizing, so I thank you. I want to thank my co-stars, Leo, Margot Robbie, Margot Robbie's feet, Margaret Qualley's feet, Dakota Fanning's feet. Seriously, Quentin has separated more women from their shoes than the TSA. Now, we all know what we do is a team sport, and we elevate each other. And I got to work with some amazing, amazing people. Mr. Pacino, Mr. Dern, Kurt Russell, Leo, Dakota, Tim. Wait, where are you guys? Miss Butters, a bunch of the new generation, Margaret Qualley, Austin Butler. Anyway, you all elevated my game. I certainly hope I did the same for you. Let's be honest, it was a difficult part. A guy who gets high, takes his shirt off, and doesn't get on with his wife. It's a big stretch.
Now the camera pans the audience. It goes to Jennifer Aniston. And she's clapping and smiling. And then afterwards, they see each other, and he reaches out and touches her hand, and she touches his, and it's the sweetest thing you've ever seen. And so the world wants them to get back together again. Don't know if it's going to happen, but that's why I believe the CNN piece begins with, "This is why we can't have nice things." The photographer who put it up on Twitter said, "Caught this pretty cool moment when Brad stopped and watched Jen with her SAG award. He couldn't stop smiling." The two are photographed exchanging hellos backstage. Memes and strong reactions resulted. Yeah, no kidding. But they both look great. And it's just nice to see them both have that happy moment. You've been texting to 312-981-7200. We sure appreciate that. John, isn't this what the Blackhawks went through? A little while ago, we were talking about the trouble the Cubs have had getting their contract done with Marquee Sports. Or you've got Comcast, Marquee, and the Cubs all trying to play ball nicely here. And so far, it hasn't happened. Anyway, John, isn't this what the Blackhawks went through before they came to TV? New and new of the Blackhawks. So sad. People did know of the Blackhawks, but it's true. The Blackhawks were one of the, if not the very last, professional franchise of the big four sports in America to not regularly broadcast their games of their own volition, which in retrospect is just the strangest thing to imagine. And we're not talking about the 1940s here. We're talking the 1970s.
Were the Blackhawks on home on? When are you talking any TV or home? You're talking home TV, home games on television, okay. Right? When John McDonough took over as president of the Blackhawks, and Rocky Wirtz assumed control of the team,
yeah,
that's when it happened. So that would have been the mid 2006, 2007.
Are you kidding me?
There? Yeah,
it was that recent. I just have it in my mind that...
Was it after Bill Wirtz died?
Wow. Wow. Okay, now Google that, my friend, because I guess that makes my point that these things just don't always go as smoothly, seamlessly, or obviously to us fans as they should. But this person said...
Actually, it was even later than that, John.
When?
It's more recent than that, I think.
You're looking. I know you're looking and reading.
I was just checking it out. 2011.
John, isn't this what the Blackhawks went through before they came to TV? No one knew of the Blackhawks. We've always had great play-by-play of Blackhawks in this town. And the fans showed up. It's not like they weren't selling tickets, but it's been one of the hottest tickets in town since they went on TV. So you think that was after 2000-something, right? That they began putting all the games on TV?
No, it was.
And prior to that, they weren't. Which I knew of that phenomenon. I didn't remember that it was that recent. By the way, Ken Starr is going to be one of the attorneys representing the president at his Senate trial tomorrow. Alan Dershowitz is going to lead on the verbal briefs. I understand that he'll be doing a lot of the talking. But we talked to Ken Starr last year. He had a book out called Contempt, and it was about the Clinton impeachment. And, of course, Ken Starr would write it. And it was the most interesting interview. It goes over 30 minutes. We put it up on my Facebook page. He said some things that were spot on, relevant to today. That's our conversation with Ken Starr on Facebook. I'm WGN King John. It's 10:08. Hey, Mary, what are you having over there?
Turkey.
Turkey sandwich?
With lettuce.
Okay, so just, I don't know what the rules of engagement are. Good morning, it's John Williams. This is WGN Radio. We're here weekdays from 9 to noon on social media. I'm WGN King John. Maybe this is a news click, Producer Elif. Although over the weekend we asked you the following question: the state might remove red light cameras entirely. We talked to a legislator about that yesterday. That is our last show on Friday. And you had two options, great idea or bad idea. You could have said, great idea, those red light cameras are counterproductive. Or it's a bad idea, they raise money and they make the road safe. 84% of you said, great idea, they're counterproductive. And 16%, you only had two options, said bad idea, get rid of bad idea. They raise money and they make the road safe. That is, we should keep the red light cameras. Texture just poured in, said, hey, thanks a lot, John Williams. I now have Jolene stuck in my head. Curse you. Have a great day. Signed, Matt in Kenosha. Well, it was in mine, Matt. Now I'm handing it off to you.
It's a great song. What's wrong with that?
I do like that song. But after 1,000 replays in your head, you do kind of want something else.
Yeah. Have you ever heard the Miley Cyrus version of it?
Of Jolene.
Yeah. Oh, no, the duet they sing together? No, she does it on her own, like in a backyard or a farm or something. With
really?
Ben.
Just sing it and it's pretty good?
It's really good. She has an amazing voice.
Miley is, I think we now understand, not just, you know, a pop culture figure, but also a really good singer.
Incredible singer.
I think she, and I hope she gets the props in people's minds that she deserves, because Miley is a good singer.
No, she's really good, but they did sing a duet together one time.
I'm sure they did.
We'll find it, Bella. Grab one or both of those, and let's play them. But I want to go back to this potential news click for us, which is, and it just came up over the weekend, if you are going to visit someone who is vegan and you're not, what are the rules of engagement? Is it reasonable to expect them to serve you something other than the vegan dinner they would have? That is, should they make some chicken, say, even though they don't eat chicken, as a courtesy to you because you're their guest? Or when you go to somebody's house and they're vegan, then of course you're not going to get a ham sandwich for lunch and you're not going to get chicken for dinner. You're going to get whatever it is vegans eat. Now, and what if, and what if the idea of eating a vegan dinner is a very unpleasant proposition for you, but they've invited you over? Or maybe you're going to stay there overnight, like you're traveling across through town. Hey, we're going to swing by. And they said, well, if you're in town, make sure you stay at our place. And you say, okay, we'll stay at your place.
Or BYOM, bring your own meat.
I don't suppose they would be offended by that, right? Like if you say, hey, listen, I love the tofu and kale. If you don't mind, I got this steaming hot chicken from the Jewel. They have those little chickens in the little, those little bins where you just go pick up a whole
rotisserie chicken.
Oh my God! That's the greatest invention.
Oh, they're the best. I do it all the time.
But then again, maybe as a vegan family, that's kind of walking in there with the very antithesis of their menu choices, right? They don't do this, and
no,
there
they
you
don't
are
cook
doing
meat. They don't cook meat in their house, so I don't think they wouldn't do it.
And would they be rightly offended that now you're putting meat on their dishes and you're smelling up their whole house with chicken, and they don't want that? So, but you're thinking, dude, you invited me to come over. I'm staying at your place. I don't want to eat your food. So who's supposed to bend to whom? I presume you've been there before. 312-981-7200. How does this go? How does this go at your place?
But do you think if you went to a wedding, when you go to a wedding, now there's, you know, you can get a vegetarian meal or a vegan meal. You can order them separately at a wedding. But do you think if you went to a vegan wedding, they'd let you order a normal meal?
Boy, they'd
separately?
Better. They'd better.
I don't think that would happen.
That's going to affect my gift. I'll tell you that right now. If I can't get the beef choice or the chicken choice.
But what do you do if it's a vegan wedding?
Then they have to. I think that, to me, in both cases, if I say, hey, you're coming through town, stay at my place. Or if I say, hey, we haven't seen you in a while, come over to our house for dinner. We're vegans. But if you're not, I think the onus is on the host. If you're going to invite someone, then you accommodate them. That's the essence of hosting. So now you have to do it for them. And you have to let them. So there you are. I don't know how you're going to get meat in your house, but they sell it at the store. You go pick some up and you cook it up for them.
I agree with you, John, but there's going to be, I bet you will not win this one at all. Because vegetarian, it's like a moral thing. It's not a religion, though, right?
It's not that.
It's just a belief.
It is a function of some
religious.
I think it's a tenet of some religious beliefs that you do and don't, obviously.
It's not like you're Jewish and you can't eat.
I'm about to make that comparison. There are some faiths that say, here's our diet. And if you're an ardent adherer of Judaism, then you certainly want kosher food. So I get it. But I think most of the people who are vegans are doing so just as a lifestyle choice, not as a religious one. And even if it was your faith, you could still serve non-kosher food to me, couldn't you? Right?
Yeah.
You could still serve meat to me.
I agree, because if they came to our house, it's a pain in the neck to make vegan food. Like, you know?
Well, but now, wait a minute, Mary. The other way around
isn't it?
You and I are meat eaters. We've invited the vegans over.
But I'm not a real big meat eater, so I wouldn't care. I'd try it.
We need to have hearty non-meat dishes for them to accommodate, I think, their dietary requirements, because we're hosting.
Right. I agree.
So I think that's, to me, the court the ball is in. We'll start with Anne, who will at least update us on the Dolly Parton story. Then all our lines are ringing about this vegan thing. Hey, Anne, you're on WGN Radio. Good morning.
Hello. Good morning. I just wanted to let you know that, you know, Miley Cyrus's godmother is Dolly Parton. And when you think of Dolly Parton back in the day, her big wigs, her cleavage, her shape, her outspokenness is kind of like Miley is today. So they're two of a kind, I guess.
Yeah. Hadn't thought about that. Hadn't thought about that at all. But Dolly is...
You know, it makes sense.
Dolly is Miley's godmother. Wow. Wow.
Yeah.
Well, then how appropriate that they sing that song together.
Jolene, 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 Jolene. I'm begging of you, please don't take my man. Jolene, Jolene.
I guess there's a couple versions of that. Thanks for the call, Ann. Appreciate you helping us out.
Please don't take him just because you.
Let's go to Barbara on WGN. Hey, Barb, it's John. You're on the air. What have you got for us? Hi, Barb. You're on the air. Coming to Barb. Hey, Barb, are you there? I don't hear Barb. We'll come back to Barb, and let's try Kat. Hi, Kat. You're on the air. What's up?
Hi. One way to prevent climate change is to eat less dead animals. When we go to places, there's everything to eat except meat, so don't change your menu when you're I'm coming over. Come over to my house. You better not bring any dead animals to eat. Been vegan for 6 years, vegetarian for 32. I'm 77. I'm very healthy, and I'm very happy that I'm not eating any dead animals.
Do you miss steak, chicken, fish, that sort of thing?
I used to miss White Castles, but now they have Impossible Burgers there, so I'm missing nothing now.
They are getting better at that. And you've done it, though, not for health reasons, but for environmental reasons?
Well, it started out to be because I love animals. I mean, if you're going to eat a pig, you might as well eat your dog. That's how I see it.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause pigs are smart and cute. But now it's stressing more to reach more people, climate change, yeah. It just takes so much energy, water, and ground, grass, and all that.
And the methane.
Animals. Yeah, the methane.
No, I'm not kidding. I mean, that's methane, as I understand it, I think I read this over the weekend, is actually a more harmful environmental gas than carbon dioxide.
That's what I've heard, too, yes.
Okay, thanks for the phone call. I appreciate you listening.
Thank you, John.
Have a good day. I remember when this came up the first time on this show, it was last year, maybe the year before, and a guy was talking to us about something along these lines, and then he said, but the reason that you should not be eating meat is because of the environment. And I said, boy, that's going to be a tough sell. I mean, there's a lot of reasons to eat meat. It's delicious. It supports our farmers and so on and so forth. It's a good source of protein. You want to eat your meat, eat your meat. He said, you shouldn't eat meat because it's bad for the environment. And I said, that is going to be a tough sell. But I'd say in the last year or so, you hear that argument more and more. And maybe that will bear more pressure on people to at least think about it. But and that's a recent consideration, isn't it? On line five is Lisa. Lisa, you're on WGN.
Hi. My opinion is not trying to sway people to eat vegan or not eat vegan. I have a son who's vegan partially because of health reasons and philosophy. But I think in terms of if we were invited over to his house, he would not want any meat in his house, nor would other vegans, for similar reasons to the previous caller said. I also think you need to think about it like if you kept kosher and you would not want people to bring other food into your house, like spare ribs or something like that. It's your house. You're going to feed people what you eat. I don't think that he would expect, my son would expect, other people to cook for him a special meal, and so he would just eat whatever's available. If you don't like it, then you go somewhere else afterwards.
Or does he bring
something else?
We've had this happen. Sometimes people will bring. I think we're especially accommodating. This really hasn't come up much at our place, but I do know a friend who is vegan or vegetarian and will sometimes, you know, arrive with her own hearty dish. Brenda's always thinking along those lines for them, but when she comes over, we'll have meat on the menu, and she's cool with that. And then she might cook another item that she knows she would like, but I don't think
absolutely.
It's without,
yes, and share it with everybody.
Yeah. You know, do you think this is generational too? That is, it seems to me like young people. If you listening right now are 15, 25, 30, and that swath. It seems to me like they're driving a lot more of this than the boomer generation. Do you think that's true?
I think it's true because I think our kids, and I think I'm in the same similar age category as you are, and our kids are similar ages. I think that they're so much more aware of the environment. Mm-hmm. My kids get crazy when I show up with plastic water bottles, and they have all the refillable ones.
Yeah.
My grandchildren know that those bottles are our grandma's, you know, because I'm the only one that uses them. They're teaching their kids differently, and they've learned differently. You know what? More kudos to them. I think they're going to help save our planet, and it's harder for us to learn these new tricks. I think we have to respect them. I know when my son and us as a family go somewhere, I will ask the other family, do you want me to bring something that he can eat? Sometimes they'll discuss with me the menu that they're having, and he'll eat around it. He won't eat the meat. He'll eat the salad. He'll eat the vegetable.
Yeah, right, right.
He'll eat the soup, you know.
You raised him right. Thanks for the phone call.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
I appreciate you listening. The American Lung Association has its Fight for Air Climb. Are you going to do this? Speaking of living healthy, join WGN Radio and WGN TV at the biggest stair climb in Chicago. The Fight for Air Climb is presented by United Healthcare at Presidential Towers. It's going to be Sunday, March 8th. Your first step is to register or donate at WGNradio.com/events. Or fightforairclimb.org. I'll give you that again in a second. You can climb 1, 2, 3, all four towers. It's 2,340 steps if you do that. Every step counts in your fight for clean air and healthy lungs. The American Lung Association's Fight for Air Climb is March 8th. Register or pledge your support at wgnradio.com/events. Or visit fightforairclimb.org. There's two reasons to do it. One is because it's good for that organization. Another one is it's a fun challenge for you. You know, walk up the stairs. You can jog up them. You can do one tower or four. There are stops and breaks along the way. There's a lot of camaraderie. It's kind of like a fun run or a marathon with a lot of support and pausing stations and water bottles and stuff like that. And you can do this or do as much of this as you can. You'll be glad that you did. Okay, one more time, WGNradio.com/events or fightforairclimb.org. Hey, Matt, you're on WGN Radio. What's up, Matt?
Hey, hi, John. How are you? Happy Good. New Year, and hands up for MLK Junior Day.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. What can I do for you?
Okay, I just wanted to chime in on the whole vegan, vegetarian thing versus meat eaters. I think if you go over to their house, you might get entertained by a dish that you really find good, and then you can bring, you know, get the recipe from them and bring it home. If they come over to your house, then I think you should accommodate them for their vegetarian or vegan needs. I don't think that's a big deal, and that's coming from a guy that's the largest beef producer in Kendall County, Illinois.
Oh, no kidding. Are you a Yorkville guy? Where do you live?
Sandwich.
Are you kidding?
Yeah. Well, yeah, SPY. Sure.
That's where I got my start. I lived in Sandwich.
I know.
Radio stations in Plano, and the town just east is Yorkville, SPY, Spio Radio.
Yep. So if I ever win the lottery, I am going to buy all the space in between Plano and Sandwich and start a town called Baloney.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm glad that joke hasn't died. And how's business for you, Mr. Cattle Raiser, the largest in Kendall County?
It's tough. I mean, you know what's going on right now. So,
no, I don't. Is it because of the
trade war?
The trade war. So actually, it's harder for you to get the price you need, or they're just the sellers aren't there. The buyers aren't there.
The buyers aren't there. The markets are closed.
Yeah. Wow. So then, do you not slaughter as many cattle? Do you just keep them alive longer and wait?
No, you can't do that.
It doesn't work that way, huh?
No, not if they all go to Aurora Beef Pack, so they have to be high quality. They're, you know, high end restaurant quality cattle.
Yours are. Yes.
Well,
does that then preserve at least the market for you? I mean, it's tough for beef farmers, but at least your stuff's being consumed domestically, right?
Mostly Mostly domestically.
Or I guess it could be shipped overseas, right? I mean, a cow here could be a high-end steak over there, right?
Sure. Yeah. It's more because I do corn and soybeans as well. So I'm just, you know, where do you put that stuff?
I don't know what you mean by that. Where do you put that stuff?
Well, where do you sell it if the markets are closed?
Oh, I see. So it's not just the beef, it's grain as well for you. So you're really feeling that right now, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
I mean, so how does that work? So you sell your grain at the elevator, right, in town?
Yeah, I can sell it to the elevator in Newark, or I can sell it to the river.
And when you do that, then somebody gives you a price for it, and the price you're getting right now is lower because there's less exporting to China. Is that it?
Yeah, it's plain supply and demand.
Sure.
Right?
And one last question about that. I mean, while we all hear this, it's not that often we actually get to talk to somebody it directly impacts. Can you give me a price quote or a percentage difference? I mean, what has this meant to you, Matt?
Okay, so we'll start with the cattle.
Okay, hold on a second. Elif said I got to take a break. Can you hold on for a second?
Yeah, sure.
Hold on a second, Matt and Andy and Stu and the rest of you. Stay right there. This is WGN. We've got news around the corner, too. I want to finish this conversation after that. Earlier in one of the newscasts, you had a statistic that I think I heard correctly. The percentage of people who lost their job as a result of getting their license suspended, as a result of having unpaid parking tickets. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, 42%, according to Mayor Lightfoot.
That is cuckoo bananas.
Oh, yeah.
So you didn't park correctly. You got a parking ticket. You shouldn't have done that. And that's the first domino that leads you to being unemployed. That's crazy. I mean, yeah, own your misdeed here. You shouldn't have done that. But then you get parking tickets. You don't pay them. I don't know why you didn't pay. Maybe you don't have the money. Maybe you're a bum, but you didn't pay the tickets. So then you get enough of them. We suspend your license. Now you can't drive. Now you don't go to work. Now you lose your job. That happens to 42% of those people?
Yeah.
Unbelievable.
And from a non-moving violation, you know, just something that can happen to anybody on a day just for, you know, a slip of the mind.
And I know some of you don't like it when other people get away with stuff you don't get away with, right? So you paid your parking ticket. You were a good citizen. They weren't. They didn't. I don't know how we fix that. I don't know what we do to them, but I'm telling you that if the end result is 42,000 fewer people are paying taxes, now you lose. That's not good for anybody. It's 10:34. We'll pick this conversation up with Carol Ammons, who is one of the representatives behind the move to rescind those tickets. But I want to finish my conversation with Matt, who called in a little while ago. We were talking about who needs to accommodate whom. You go to somebody's house who's vegan for dinner or maybe an overnight stay. Should they provide non-vegan meals for you, or should you accept it that you're going to their place and that's the way they roll there? Matt said you should. The meat eaters should be ready to not eat meat at those people's houses. They shouldn't have to accommodate you. And he said that's coming from the largest beef producer in Kendall County. You still there, Matt?
Yeah, I'm here.
Hey, so you were just talking to me a little bit before the break, and you said that just given the trade tensions right now, and things are getting better, round one with China, but right now grain and beef sales have tariffs imposed, and so the market's dried up for some of your products. And I asked you before the break, can you put a number on it for me? How would you put it?
So if you want to do a comparison, and China is a pretty big market. I mean, let's just be real about that. There's a lot of mouths in China. So having those markets closed is disturbing because there was a lot of stuff that was done to open those markets up. And now that they're closing, South America is taking over. And to get them reopened again, it's going to be very difficult.
Oh, I see. So China will just buy soy, corn, beans, beef from Brazil, say, right?
Correct.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's exactly it. And to give you an example, so if I go back, I don't know, like let's say 4 years ago, my beef was going for about $236 a hundredweight. Right. Now I'm getting about $120 a hundredweight.
You're getting how many? 100 and what?
About 120.
120. So almost exactly half.
Yeah. And then if you go to corn, we were looking at $7 corn. And now we're looking at $3.25 corn.
Again, almost exactly half. And how recently did that price drop? Like, how recently was it $7 or $236?
About 4 years ago.
4 years ago. But it, so, in other words, has it steadily been going down? It wasn't just this recent trade controversy with China. It's been going down gradually anyway.
It was going down gradually, and then it just kind of went off a cliff. Yeah. Is basically what happened.
And I suppose your costs are relatively the same, though, right?
They're pretty constant, yeah. Fuel costs aren't bad right now because it does take fuel to, you know, put stuff in and take stuff out and ship and all that stuff. But
This is a question from one of our listeners. They said, please ask your caller. Thank you, 309. Please ask your caller on the phone. His name is Matt. What subsidies he is receiving. So, that's a good question. I just calculated that you lost half of your revenue, your income.
Mm-hmm.
How much is the government making up in subsidies to you?
For a family farm, my farm is relatively small compared to a factory farm. I don't want to get so political about it, but
I'm not asking you to at all. I'm just, and you don't have to share this if you don't want. But do you get all of that money back? Half of the money back? How much would you say?
No. The factory farms do get a lot because they have lobbyists.
But if you lost half of your revenue, would you say? Put it this way: you said that the beans or the beef was 230. It went down to 120. How much are you getting back for that lost sale of the beef? The
price? Nothing for the beef.
And what about the beans, corn,
a little bit there.
a little bit, but I mean not enough. So, but you're mostly feeling the loss. That's what you're telling me.
Oh yeah, yeah. So for example, I would say that I lost in the last 2 years, I've lost way over $100,000.
All right, that's all the time I have for this. We need to move on. I sure appreciate your candor and your time. Good luck to you. And if I'll eat some beans and a corn today, and maybe that'll help.
All right, King John.
Thanks,
you
Matt.
Have a good day.
And by the way, that's not even funny. This is his livelihood, and I don't mean to make light of it. I don't know what else I can do. Let's talk to Carol Ammons. Hey, Carol, it's John Williams. You're on WGN Radio. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you for having me.
Carol, I see you're in 207 or 217 area code. Are you downstate? Where are you from?
I am. I'm in Champaign-Urbana, Central Illinois.
103rd District Representative, co-sponsor of the legislation to reinstate the 55,000 driver's licenses for unpaid moving violations. So parking tickets for most people statewide. Is that what we're talking about?
That is what we're talking about. I'm the chief sponsor in the House. The original bill was Senate Bill 3052. We did a companion bill so that we would have two moving at the same time. The one that ultimately passed was Senate Bill 1786, and it took a lot of work to get that done, but we're very happy that the governor signed it.
So how far back do these tickets go? I mean, how do I know if I have a parking ticket? Do I not owe it if I haven't paid it? I mean, what happens here?
No, what happens is the crux of this bill eliminates the use of the Secretary of State's office as a collection agency. That's really what was happening. It eliminates the suspension of driver's licenses for a penalty for non-driving violations, including not paying a parking ticket or a tollway ticket or fine or fee. What happens is that the person's license will be reinstated, but if they owe the city of Chicago and other cities throughout the state, they can reduce these ballooned more than any credit card debt you would ever imagine, ballooning from non-paying of a parking ticket. So if you got a ticket in Chicago and that ticket cost you $75, $100, which I think is too much,
yep.
But if you did, that ticket would grow exponentially. And in some cases, we learned through this two-year process that people may have started off with a $200 ticket. And because most of these are poor people that were really, really impacted by this, that $200 ticket ballooned to over to $1,000,
yeah.
$1,500,
yeah.
$9,000 from ballooning rate, that there was no check and balance on that.
Yeah, we've sure seen stories about that. ProPublica has done some nice reporting on that here in the Chicago area, and I guess statewide, that's what happens. Some municipalities have really yes. these onerous fee schedules where if you don't pay it on time, it's not $10 more. It'll double, it'll triple, and then you look at that and you go, well, skip it. I'll never be able to pay that. So then does this, and then what, that municipality tells the Secretary of State's office, and then they suspend your driver's yeah. license?
Yes, it was such an eye-opening experience for me, just starting to work on this problem a couple of years ago. I had no idea that if a person couldn't pay, that A, it was ballooning at the rate it was, and B, that the municipalities would send these outstanding bills, so to speak, to the Secretary of State and say, hey, you can suspend this person's driver's license because they're not paying us.
Okay.
That was all authorized by state law.
But do those people still owe the amount of money? Like, okay, good, they got their driver's license, but what happens to that money they owe?
It just keeps growing. In
no,
many
no, no.
cases,
but
people,
I mean, as a result of this legislation, they still owe the money, though, right?
So what has happened is, yes, they may still owe a ticket. So in the city of Chicago, what Chicago did through their own permission and the city council there said, let's take away all of these fines and fees that just kind of tripled and doubled over time, reduce it down to what the person originally owed, and allow the people to pay that the balance. And what I learned from the secretary, the clerk in Chicago said at our press conference, is an amazing 75% of the people have come in and paid that fee.
Isn't that amazing? I didn't know it was that high. But now here's the criticism. I'll bet you know what it is. I'll bet you know what's making some people angry, Carol. Carol Ammons, she's a Democrat representative lawmaker in Champaign, and we're talking about this plan to reinstate the driver's licenses of people who lost them because they had unpaid tickets, non-moving violations. A lot of parking tickets stack up. Next thing you know, you've lost your driver's license. You know, it's a little surprising to me, Carol. I'll get to the criticism of this in a minute, is that people evidently were complying with that. That is, their license gets suspended, so then they do stop driving because they don't have a license. Is that what happens?
The majority of people not only do stop driving, but they also lose their jobs because most jobs require a license to work there. And we saw that in 42% of individuals who lost their jobs, it was due to suspension of their licenses.
Some people say, I paid my ticket. First of all, I don't double park. When I do, I pay my fine. And that's the way the game is played. Why are we giving these people the break that I didn't get?
Well, you know, it's an interesting thing that we saw in some of the research that we found, not just in Illinois, but in New Jersey and other places, where you have significant income disparities. You have to address this as a failure of government, not as a failure of individuals. The moment that we're in right now, and today happens to be the King holiday, and King reminds us that an unjust law is no law at all. And so if you have massive disparity in income, then yes, one person in Schaumburg or Elmhurst may be able to pay their ticket with no problem. But people who are just basically getting to and from work on public transit and trying to make sure they can feed their family, this unjust penalty hurts them in many, many ways that others in Elmhurst and Schaumburg may not understand. And so it is important for us to look at equity. It's important for us to look at justice, and this was a significant justice issue because the majority of the suspensions were black and brown people from the south and west sides of Chicago, and they were struggling to get from point A to point B before their ticket or before their suspension. And I also want to add that the city of Chicago, the city of Champaign, or Urbana, who decides that a parking ticket that may cost you 75 cents, and I don't have any quarters on me, right? $0.75 that balloons to $25, who decided that that's what the penalty should be in the first place?
Interesting question. 773 said they can still boot you. So that would be up to the municipality. If they have a policy that your car is sitting there, it's got some tickets on it, they boot your car, that can still happen, but you will retain your driver's license. Do I understand that correctly, Carol?
That is correct. However, I do believe that, again, we need to look at boots, and boots is one of those things that I'm interested in studying, as red as red light cameras. All of these things that suck the pennies and nickels out of the pockets of poor people, we need to look at that. Government should not, and this is an issue of liberty, government should not use its authority to abuse its citizens. And this is what these kind of laws do. It abuses its citizens.
I understand that, and I don't even argue that. But I do also hope you acknowledge that some of our listeners are thinking the citizens have an obligation to follow the laws and rules that everybody else is. It will be more injurious to you if you don't have the means, but we should all play by the same rules.
Well, we certainly are not playing by the same rules, and I know we don't have time to argue that point.
Yeah.
But clearly, there's a disparity in income, access, and equity that no one can argue on either side of this exists. We have to do what we can as legislators to bring justice and equity and balance to all of the laws that we pass. And in this case, this law, as it currently existed prior to the signing of the bill, did not met out equally, and it certainly didn't represent justice.
Glenn had a question. You're on WGN. Hi, Glenn. You're on the air.
So why is it that a person who has the ability to pay the ticket, why would they pay the ticket if there's no ramifications? Just because they're working and have the ability to pay, they should feel some sort of just or moral responsibility to pay the debt? I mean, you're saying that it should be equal. You're setting up two different levels of law for individuals based on their income, and you, in your own words, just said because people are poor, they shouldn't be able to be struggling. Well, the people who are wealthy enough to be able to pay the tickets shouldn't be penalized. Why are you setting a double standard, in your own words, that you don't want to do? It doesn't make sense. Why would
I got your point, Glenn. Hold on, Glenn. Yeah. Hold on. Yeah, got your point. Go ahead. Go ahead, Carol.
I actually have some agreement with your caller. I believe that people like you and I and your caller who pay taxes for the roads that we drive on already, that we already provide our income to government to function. And then on top of that, government sets up something called meters or tollways to make us pay additional dollars. I don't actually think it's right.
Well, that's how they maintain the roads. I mean, the meters and tolls aren't going to go away. I think that the principal point he's making is that if we're going to have forgiveness for people, we should maybe have, you know, that won't be equitable. That's not fair either then, right? I mean, if you can't pay, okay, that's tough for you. I'm sorry about that, but I can. So am I the only one that has to pay? But that's not what we're talking about here. You still owe the debt. The point is, are we going to let you keep your driver's license? That's what this is about, right?
And we are going to let you keep your driver's license, and I still do have to pay the ticket, by the way.
Yeah, yeah.
The city of Chicago, even though they give amnesty to those who may not have all the money at one point, they allow you to set up a realistic payment plan. Let's think about this. The previous payment plan in the city of Chicago required you to put down a down payment. It was so excessive that, yes, your caller maybe could pay the down payment, but others really could not, and that is a function of government. Government decided to put this excessive down payment there and created the conditions for which a person could not pay. And now we're saying, no, you cannot suspend that license. The city of Chicago is reforming how it is collecting its parking tickets. And yes, you still got to pay that parking ticket.
Yeah. I completely agree with you about setting up reasonable means for people to pay back. If you have $100 in tickets, you should pay $100 in tickets. But it shouldn't now become $1,000 because you didn't get it done in time. I'd be happy to get 50 of the 100, to be honest with you. These ballooning payments, you're right. Somebody just made that up. And you might as well charge people $1 million. Hey, Chicago, why don't you charge them $1 million and then all of our financial problems will be solved? Oh, no, wait, it won't, because you can't get $1 million from people. They don't have it.
So
They don't have it.
Let's do
and
something realistic.
And people end up in bankruptcy court.
Yeah. But what about this?
In bankruptcy court for not paying.
What about this? Eric, you're on WGN.
Holy shit.
Eric, do you have something to say on the radio? What was your point? Eric said the parking meters, Carol, are there for a reason. They're there because you don't want people to be there all day long. It's not just a moneymaker. It's also a way to regulate flow. Do you understand that?
Oh, I certainly understand that. But I think your caller and others should look a little deeper into who owns the parking meters.
Yeah, I know. That is true. We should not have sold those things or the Skyway a long time ago. I agree with you on that. Goes into effect July 1st. Is that right, Representative?
That is correct. Secretary of State is putting provisions in place to notify those who would be eligible to have their license reinstated, and it goes into effect July 1, 2020.
Carol, it's nice to talk to you. You and I have not met before. By the way, do you have anything to say? I was just reading in the Chicago Tribune over the weekend about how Mike Madigan has this gigantic series of funds that he's able to control, and he spent over $400,000 in legal fees in the last few months. The Tribune has a large editorial. It was yesterday or today saying he should step down from his speakership role. Do you agree with that?
You know, I'm from Champaign-Urbana, so I don't get Chicago Tribune here, but I have not seen that story. I think what is happening in Springfield, and you will see in the spring session, that there will be many people calling for significant reforms and ethics reforms, and I think that will fall in that same category.
Yeah. Well, that's not you saying yes, though. I'm not saying he has to lose his job, just step down as speaker. You're not calling for that yet, huh?
Yeah, I have not seen that at all, and I haven't called for anything at this point. But what I am calling for is that there needs to be significant reform in ethics as well as campaign finance reform, because all of that is all tied together that you're describing.
Representative Ammons, nice to talk to you. Thanks for joining us on WGN.
Thank you for having me. I look forward to the next time.
You will. I will, too. I've enjoyed your conversation. It's 11:08. This is WGN. John Williams here in the Skyline studio. Well, I'll tell you what, the text messages about two topics today are very interesting, and I think we'll go back to some of them in the 10 o'clock hour tomorrow. If you were listening in the last hour, I just asked a not entirely hypothetical question. If you are going to go visit some friends and they are vegan, then what's the expectation when you walk in if they're going to serve you a meal? That they will accommodate you because you're not, or you should accommodate them and be ready to eat whatever it is that they serve. And there were many messages about that. Some of you have been to that movie before. But even more messages came in based on our conversation we just had with State Representative Carol Ammons, 103rd District, Champaign. She was the author of that legislation that said if you have these non-moving violations, you've got parking tickets and you haven't paid them. Eventually, that gets to the Secretary of State's office. They rescind your license. People then don't drive, and then they lose their jobs. So this is bad for everybody. So what are we going to do about that? Well, now Illinois is reinstating 55,000 driver's licenses suspended over unpaid parking tickets. Now, a guy called in while she was on, and he said, well, then why would anybody pay their tickets? Why should I pay? Just because I've got a good job and have enough money, why am I paying my ticket when these people don't have to? And I think that misses the point. A couple of you pointed this out, that those people will still owe the ticket, and maybe even a little more if they don't pay it in time. But it's crazy to expect these people to pay back tickets when they don't have the income, when the tickets balloon. ProPublica has reported on this. We've talked to the reporters a couple of times who've done the stories, and it is pretty amazing in Chicago and maybe elsewhere how those payments balloon from $100 to $1,000 to several thousand dollars. One guy lost his car, for crying out loud. So I think that makes sense. I don't mind reinstating their driver's licenses. I don't mind sending those tickets back to what they were originally. Heck, if it was a collection agency that was doing it in the private sector, you wouldn't even get the $100 for a $100 ticket. You might get $75. You might get $50. Are you a collection agency? How much money do you really expect to get when you go collecting for someone? The text messages include these. Can't we add unpaid parking tickets to the person's state tax bill? I guess you could do that if they had a refund coming. Take the money out of that. But I still don't think you should take those large payments. 773, I had $250 deducted from my paycheck for a $100 ticket with late fees. And then there's a bunch of squiggle lines and exclamation points. I think they're cursing at me or the world. 815, park where you're supposed to park and the problem is solved. 630, is she saying that those in the suburbs are morally obligated to pay? 708, if you cannot afford to pay your ticket, you should be allowed to work on a Saturday picking up garbage on behalf of the city to pay down the debt. That doesn't pay down the debt. It just humiliates you. I don't understand the value of that. To make government, this is 779, to make government fines equal, people should pay the same percentage of their income for each ticket or government fee. The next one, 630, ticket fees should be based on your income. Be careful what you ask for. Because, Don, I don't know, or Mary, if you guys are up to speed on this, but some countries I know, I don't know if some states have this, where your speeding tickets are commensurate to your income. And so then you say, okay, fine, then the people that can't pay don't pay much, and the people that can do. But what will happen is, if you make a decent salary, your speeding ticket, your parking ticket, is going to be ginormous. The record for a speeding ticket is over $1 million. Somebody Whoa. Was going fast and got $1 million speeding tickets because they were really rich. Now, maybe that's right. Maybe you say, well, that's what you get, Mr. Rich Guy. What do you care about a $100 speeding ticket? But it seems to me like there's something nutty about $1 million speeding ticket.
Yeah, so
if,
that's
if
big.
You make, say you make $100,000 a year, should your speeding ticket cost more than the person who makes $50,000? Because that's what you're suggesting here, folks. And I'm not sure you love that idea. Maybe you do because you're moderate income and you don't think it's going to affect you. But somebody, Elif, will you Google this or do it as you do? What is the highest speeding ticket ever paid? And it was like in Sweden or Denmark or someplace like that. And they tie it to your income. And the guy was doing like 123 miles an hour, some dang thing. And so the ticket came to, I want to say it was seven figures. My estimated probability of accuracy on this, 44%. 44%. Producer Aleph, what's the highest speeding ticket ever paid, please?
299,000 Swiss francs, John.
299,000. Okay, I was way off. Well, that's a third of a million. 299,000 Swiss francs.
Those delicious Swiss francs.
Carol, you're on WGN Radio. What can we do for you, Carol?
Hi. You know, both my daughter and myself received parking tickets in the mail. We live out in the suburbs, and the tickets stayed. We were downtown in the city. We were out of town on vacation. Our cars were in the garage. You know, I said to my daughter, let's just pay it because the city's looking for money. Otherwise, we'll lose a day's pay. We'll go to court. We'll have to pay parking. We could lose the whole damn thing. Let's just send them their damn $30 and end it. So who knows how many people this has happened to, where they get tickets in the mail from the city, and they pay it just to kill it. You know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah, I've heard about these stories. I haven't heard about them for a while, and that used to be a big deal. Maybe it still is. So you got a ticket from the city of Chicago.
Yep.
And your car wasn't there at the time.
Nope, it was parked in my garage, and I was out of town on vacation. I was in New York City.
And where was your car sitting at the time?
In my garage.
No, I know, but in what town?
Lombard.
Yeah. And the city of Chicago sent you a ticket. So what happened was a meter person wrote down the wrong license plate, and they sent you the ticket.
I got a ticket, and my daughter also got a ticket for her car.
And then you guys paid them rather than go through the hassle.
Absolutely. So who knows how many times that's happened? You know, and these people that are they're going to let go free, you know what? Let them go free. Because I'm sure it's been paid by other people, like me.
Yeah, you're subsidizing those people, Carol, for goodness sakes.
Absolutely. Wow. Absolutely.
Thank you for the call.
Know, let them be on the road. Let them go to work and pay their income taxes.
Well, that's where I am, Carol. Carol, I'm sorry to hear that. Thank you for the call. Does that still happen? Because I've heard of it, but I haven't heard of that lately. Is this Jefferson on line 4, Elif? Is that what we're taking? Yeah. Hey, Jefferson, this is John. You're on the air.
Mr. Williams, good morning. How are you?
Good morning. What's up?
I tell you, I mean, that lady from Champaign, I'm not sure what planet she's from, but I don't know of any situation. You know, you could say what you want about red light cameras. You can say what you want about the parking meter deal in the city of Chicago. When you pull up to a parking meter, the rate is the rate. It does not discriminate based on the car, your income, your race. Same thing with a red light camera. You go through it, it's the fine is the fine. This notion of the last couple years where every time someone gets caught doing something wrong, doesn't matter the degree, okay, that we need to bring equity and justice. I'm so tired of hearing of those two words. The justice is you broke an ordinance, you broke a law. That's it. If the fine is $25, now you may have a point, or she may have a point about the severity. How far
we do
does
that is,
the government go?
That is a big
but
part of this
notion of where this is about justice. That's not justice. You let your car sit there for 8 hours and you didn't pay. That's the justice, is you get fined for that, or you and a subsequent series of fines, then you lose the privilege of driving. It's as simple as that. Why is that such a hard concept for some of these folks to understand?
I don't know the answer to that, but I think you know that if you take those people off the tax rolls, you're cutting off your nose, fellow citizen, despite your face. If they can't go to work anymore because we took their license away, then now they're not making any money, and then you and I lose in that proposition.
Well, I suppose. But, you know, your competitor station last night had the County Board President Preckwinkle on about, you know, the reduction, her move to reduce the fares for the Rock Island and the electric line on the south side. And again, we're talking equity and justice. I mean, you know, Metra is Metra. When the private railroads in the 70s got out of commuter rail, just like they got out of passenger rail, to focus on freight, and the evolution of the RTA, one of the first things that they wind up doing is zoning the Chicago area so that, you know, everyone paid the same from Chicago to Zone C if it was 3 miles, let's say.
Right.
Now we're going to create this other solution where people that take 3 miles go south pay one increment or $1 amount. But if I go 3 miles north or northwest, I'm paying a different. I mean, I don't. In this notion of, well, we want to make sure people can get the jobs. I mean, we should just have a system where every time you buy something, it's all on a sliding scale. I mean, let's just go that far and let's cut to the chase.
I feel your frustration, Jefferson. I appreciate your listening.
Have a good day.
I can't fix it, my friend. Dave, you're on WGN Radio. Oh, Bill, you will be too. Hey, Dave, you're on the air. What's on your mind? Hi.
Good morning. I used to live in a small village in southern Cook County where you had to have a village sticker. And it was a huge apartment complex with, say, 75 cars. One morning, an officer went by. He went through the parking lot and put a ticket on every single car in that lot. He put my ticket right over my brand-new village sticker on the windshield.
Oh, no.
So when I called the village, he goes, oh, no, my officer would never do that. So I brought him my receipt and the ticket, and they were, you know, dated differently. I bought the village sticker before I got the ticket. He goes, no, no, my officer would have never done that. They charged me and charged me and charged me. They ballooned that thing up to, it was like $1,500 before I moved out of that village. I never paid it.
So you had a current sticker on your windshield, and he put a ticket on there for not having a current sticker over the sticker.
Correct.
And then they kept running the meter on that, even though you proved to him, hey, look, here's the sticker, here's the ticket.
Correct. That officer went through that parking lot and put one on every single car without even looking at their windshield.
Boy, he had a quota that day. When I get to be king, I'm not a fan of village stickers anyway. Figure out how to make your money. But this rigmarole of stickers, and is it parked on the street or is it in the driveway? And
well, there's a private parking lot for a, you know.
That's crazy. I'm sorry to hear that. When I get to be king, Mary Vanderbilt will be in charge of this department, by the way. But I'm not going to.
No way.
That's
Thank
Dave,
you,
thanks
sir.
For the call.
Have a good day.
Yeah.
heartily decline that offer, John.
When I get to be king, you will not have the option. Hey, Bill.
How much is it worth to you?
Bill, you're on the air.
Hey, so I was driving home from work one day last summer, and a police officer pulls me over, and he says my license plate had been tagged by the state as not to drive on the road. And he goes, let me guess, you have teenagers. And I go, yeah. So he goes, unfortunately, the minimum ticket amount for this is $3,000.
Wait, what did your vehicle done or your kids allegedly done?
Okay, so it turns out after investigating, my youngest son got pulled over and couldn't find the proof of insurance in my car.
Yeah.
He was home from college.
Right.
I let him use it.
Sure.
And there was a court date. Just go and show proof of insurance. He goes back to college, doesn't say a word to me. So I'm just driving around.
Those kids. Huh? Are they crazy? These kids, I'll tell you.
No, I know. And all I had to do was go to court and show them the proof of insurance. And the judge was like, you know, all right, you're good. See you later. But I was so nervous, you know, between the time of getting it. The guy gave me the ticket. We're pulled over. And I'm like, and he's walking back to his police car. And I'm like, can I finish driving home? Do I have to leave? What's up? He goes, no. If someone else pulls you over, just show them the ticket. But, you know, you got to get this cleared up. And I'm like, no kidding.
When you went to the judge, he waived the $3,000.
It took 10 seconds. I mean, I walked up, showed the guy standing next to me my proof of insurance. Judge goes, okay, you're done, and walked out. It was...
Well, that's like, the way it should be. That's
it was so scary for me. And so nothing to them.
Right, right. I mean, the $3,000 isn't going to make a difference to anybody in the city or the state. It can be crippling to you.
I have four kids in college, so it was a big deal to me.
Yeah, no, that's my point. What was the conversation like you had with your son?
Well, on all other aspects, he's a superstar.
Yeah.
So I scolded him, but, you know... What are you going to do?
Yeah. No, I get it. I get it.
Yeah.
So. Interesting. Thanks for the phone call.
All right. Have a good day.
Yeah. Probably not everyone has the same outcome before the judge, as Bill did, but I'm glad that worked that way. You know, we should all obey the laws, but I just, when you go after people's pocketbooks, it doesn't always work. And some people simply don't have the money. So now what are you going to do? And I always think that the penalty should be commensurate with the crime. And I don't think that's always the case. And don't even get me started on village stickers, because I do not like them. I think some of us are, I'm speaking about myself now, sufficiently disorganized. I don't even think I'm lazy, but sufficiently disorganized, walking around in a state of almost constant discombobulation, that details like getting the sticker done on time and stuff slip through the cracks. I know that makes me a bad citizen, but I still don't think that means that the village should have $200. And yet that sort of thing happens. I have $200. If I don't, it should not, after 60 days, be $1,000. And that's what happens to some people. That, to me, makes no sense. So the Senate is going to try the president tomorrow, or the House is going to try the president in front of the Senate. They'll be the judges on this thing. The House managers from the House will actually present the case. Alan Dershowitz, among others, will defend the president. Dershowitz is going to do a lot of the talking. One of the people that will also be talking on the president's behalf, or at least will be helping to defend him, is Ken Starr, who, of course, prosecuted Bill Clinton. So I think it's very interesting. Ken Starr came out with a book last year. And it was about the whole Clinton-Lewinsky, the Clinton impeachment. Actually, they didn't get to that part of it, though, until two-thirds of the way into the book. I mean, it's sort of Ken Starr's story about how he got there, what his beliefs are politically, philosophically, legally, and then on to this famous case. He was telling me when we interviewed him about the fact that... Now, I thought Monica Lewinsky would have been... Or Linda Tripp would be wearing a wire, but... The way this audio clip for you will explain it, Monica Lewinsky was. So let's assume Monica Lewinsky is. So the feds are making a case against Bill Clinton, and they've got Monica dead to rights. Yes, this happened, and so forth. I don't think she's guilty of a crime, but Lord knows Bill Clinton could get impeached for this. She is scheduled to have meet Linda Tripp. Monica Lewinsky and Linda Tripp are going to meet like for lunch or breakfast somewhere. They're going to be at a booth at a table. They're going to sit at a table. And Monica is wearing a wire. Elsewhere in this little restaurant are the federal agents. And they are listening in on the conversation, probably recording it too, seeing if they can get the goods on Linda Tripp or on Bill Clinton. Somehow Linda Tripp's going to say something that's going to incriminate Bill Clinton. So they're having the conversation, and the thing's not working. The thing's not working. Ah, crap. After all this, they've got this golden moment here, and the wire isn't working. So they say, what are we going to do? So they get up, and they move to a table close enough that they can actually eavesdrop in on their conversation, which must have looked a little suspicious if Linda Tripp knew what was up, but evidently she didn't. So when we interviewed Ken Starr about his book, this is how the conversation, by the way, oh yeah, I know, Elle, if you're looking at me like you're not ready for this, and it's the take a break first? Okay. The beginning of the interview reminds me of that scene. And we'll get to that after this. Don, I know you're real busy in the newsroom, and then someone else is going to sit there in a minute and get ready for still more news. But if you're around, could you be a lifeline for our Mega Monday quiz?
Sure, I'm
goes
down for
like
that.
This. If you want to play along right now, 312-981-7200. Call us right now, and you can play our little Mega Monday morning quiz. You win a mega hoodie just for playing. Woohoo! Today's topic will be Chicago, the city and suburbs. Chicago, the city and suburbs. How well do you know the city and suburbs of Chicago? 312-981-7200. Mary going to be a lifeline, too. Lapka's coming in, so Lauren will be a lifeline, maybe, and Don Kleppen will, too. It's a pretty easy quiz. Call right now. Back to the Ken Starr interview. You can hear it in its entirety, but it's just funny to me because this is the way that conversation with Ken Starr started.
I'm doing great, John. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your time. I'm just looking at my producer-engineer here to make sure that the levels are good. Why don't you count to
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Okay, I think we're good to go, right, Elif? Are the levels all right? You know, this reminds me of when you guys had Monica wearing the wire, and all of a sudden it cut out, and you thought, oh, my God, I hope this thing is recording. And then the agents then go to sit in the booth next to her and Linda Tripp, I thought, did they have to grab somebody and throw them out, or was that table just conveniently available next to them for them to eavesdrop on that conversation?
I chose not to ask that question. You would be a great lawyer, John.
Now, the beginning of our conversation, we taped it, obviously, but that's what happens. So Lewinsky and Tripp are sitting in the booth. She's wearing a wire. They're going to listen in, and they're really going to get some incriminating evidence on this because one's wearing the wire, and the other's going to say some really juicy stuff, and the thing's not working! It's not working! And then they say, quick, the booth right next to them is open. Shoom. The agents jump in there, and then they just kind of crane their necks and listen and take notes while the conversation takes place. Forget the levels. And then we went on for about a half an hour. At the end of the conversation, I was surprised how good I felt about the Justice Department or system in this country. And for that matter, Ken Starr, who I didn't know, I didn't think I was a fan of. I very much enjoyed his conversation. And what he said in that interview about do you impeach a president or not, how do you prosecute a president or not, I think are very telling based on what's happening tomorrow when the trial begins. So you might want to check that out. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. Okay, we're ready to do our little our quiz. Okay, producer Elephant, 3, 2, 1, woof.
Come back to Chicago.
To Chicago.
Chicago.
Drove to Chicago.
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 Shy City.
I'm coming home again.
Little medley of Chicago singers and songs. Kelly, you're on WGN Radio. How are you? Welcome to the show.
Thank you. I'm good.
Congratulations. You've just won the Mega Monday Morning Hoodie. I want you to wear that wherever you go.
Woohoo! Thank you.
Sponsored by Mega Pros. They make it fun to get stuff done. Question number one. Chicago is the state's largest city. What's the number two most populous city in the state of Illinois? Is it A, Aurora, B, Rockford, C, Peoria? Second most populous city in the state after Chicago is what?
Aurora.
Aurora is correct. Number two, according to the IHSA, the school with the most football wins in the state history is East St. Louis. The first Chicago area school on that list, number two overall, is A, Joliet Catholic, B, Mount Carmel, C, Manuka. No high school football teams won more games than East St. Louis. Number two is Joliet Catholic, Mount Carmel, or Manuka?
Mount Carmel.
Is correct. That was a tough one. Number three, Cook is the state's most populous county. 5.2 million people live in Cook County. The second most populous county in the state with 900,000 people is what county? This is a fill-in-the-blank.
DuPage.
DuPage, you are 3 for 3. Which can't... You're only getting one hoodie, just so you know, right?
Oh, okay. I was hoping maybe Blackhawks pick.
I'm a good one to give away stuff like that. They came into my office last week and said, you can't do that anymore. You just can't be throwing stuff out there. So it's the hoodie. Which Chicago area school am I describing? Which Chicago area college or university am I describing? 14,000 students. Tuition is $41,000. That's just tuition and fees. Spread across 6 campuses in Chicago and the Chicago area. Is that Loyola, Northwestern, or DePaul?
Ooh, I will have a lifeline on this.
Hey, Clep, what do you think on this one?
I would guess DePaul, actually.
14,000 students, $41,000 tuition, 6 campuses in the city and in the area. He says
okay.
DePaul is correct. DePaul is correct.
Thank you.
By the way, I don't know if that $41,000 tips DePaul. Tuition at the Illinois Institute of Technology, IIT, $49,000. At Northwestern, it's $56,000. And the winner-winner chicken dinner is the University of Chicago, where it's $59,000 a year. Chicago is a fantastically flat city. The spot with the highest elevation in the city of Chicago is in Beverly or in Roscoe Village.
I would go south. It's got to be Beverly.
She is 6 for 6. It is in Beverly. No mountains in Beverly, but that's the highest. There is a little rise over there, but that's as high as we get. In terms of land area, Chicago's the biggest city in the state. What's the second biggest city in the state? Is it New Lenox or Joliet?
Joliet.
7 for 7. Homes in this Chicago neighborhood are the most expensive. The median price is $2.9 million. Is it River North, The Loop, or Streeterville? I got this one wrong, by the way. This is not easy.
Okay, then I'm going to, if you got it wrong, my gut was first River North.
And I wrote the question. And I wrote the question.
But now I'm going to go Streeterville.
You were going to say River North. Now you said Streeterville. The correct answer is River North. I'm going to count that as correct because you had it. I dissuaded you. If you get them all right, you get to come back next week and vie for yet another hoodie. You need two
Woo-hoo!
More. Are you ready?
I am ready.
Almost 4 in 5 Chicago area residents of Indian descent now call the suburbs home. And in the 1990s, the Indian population in Schaumburg quadrupled. But this town is home to more than 5,000 Indians and Indian Americans, the largest population in the area outside Chicago. I mean people from India, not Native Americans, by the way. So what is the city with the largest population of Indians and Indian Americans? Is it Skokie, Hoffman Estates, or Naperville?
Skokie.
The correct answer is Naperville.
Oh.
You're going to have to just take one hoodie. By the way, this is the largest high school in Illinois. It has 4,476 students. Is it Waukegan Community High, Lyons Township High, or Lane Tech in the city?
Well, this is a quiz about the city.
Yeah.
So,
and the suburbs.
I have a lifeline.
And the suburbs. It's the city and surrounding areas. Hey, Lapka, which one do you like? You like...
Well, just because it's in the city, I would think...
But I said it's the city and the surrounding area.
But I'm just saying just based on population. But I also think that's not as popular. So I'm going to go with Lyons, actually.
Lyons Township High School in Western Springs and LaGrange. You want to go with that?
Sure.
It's Waukegan. Waukegan Community High School has 4,476 students. Lyons has about 4,100. Lane Tech has about 4,200. These are giant schools. By the way, according to U.S. News and World Report, the high school ranked best in the state and number 9 in the country is Walter Payton Prep. The one in the suburbs that has the highest ranking is New Trier of Winnetka, Hinsdale Central in Hinsdale, or Stevenson in Lincolnshire. The highest rated schools in the state are all Chicago Public Schools. You got to go to like number 7 or 8 before you get one that's outside of CPS. You know, you've got Walter Payton and a lot of those prep schools. What's the highest one outside of CPS? Stevenson, Hinsdale, or New Trier?
New Trier.
That would have been my guess. It's Stevenson in Lincolnshire. How about that? So, and you know, these rating things are kind of silly. I mean, if your kid goes to New Trier or Hinsdale or Oak Park or York, they're getting a great education. The schools out there are fantastic. But here's what it says. Walter Payton is ranked first in Illinois and number 9 in the country. Students at Walter Payton take advanced placement coursework 98% of the time. Minority enrollment is 57%. A third of the students at Walter Payton are economically disadvantaged. It is one of 106 high schools in the CPS system. And only one in the top 6 is not a CPS, according to U.S. News, and that's Stevenson in Lincolnshire. Where do you live, Kelly? Are you a Chicagoan?
I am. I am a Northside Chicagoan.
What are you doing right now? Where are you going? What are you doing?
I am going home from the gym. I am off today, and I am an RN.
I appreciate you listening. Thanks for calling. Talk to Producer Elle if we'll get you your prize off the air, okay?
Thank you, King John. You have a great day.
Not King yet. The paperwork is tied up in Cook County. When that goes through, I'm not sure I want the gig. This is getting complicated. I mentioned that Ken Starr will be part of the president's defense team yesterday. I went back and listened to part of our conversation with him when his book came out last year called Contempt, a memoir of the Clinton investigation. But at the time, people were very interested in the FBI investigation. Remember where we were a year ago? We weren't really at impeachment yet.
That was in 2018.
What was in 2018?
His book came out.
Oh, no kidding. So this interview goes back to 2018?
2018.
Wow. Do you know when? What month? Do you know when we did this? 2018. My voice does sound younger and more youthful in this interview.
Let me look right now.
No, don't, because we're on the air and we're going to do this now. So this is Ken Starr, and the question was, is the president above the law?
First, he took the whole issue of whether he could be sued to the Supreme Court of the United States, and he said, I can't be sued. I'm the President of the United States. I'm immune from suit as long as I'm the President of the United States. That was, I viewed at the time, and I said so, this is even before I became independent counsel, an extravagant position to take as a matter of constitutional law. No one is above the law, and in the fullness of time, the Supreme Court rejected Bill Clinton's claim of immunity from lawsuit 9-0.
But then, what does the law say about that? How settled is the issue of, is a sitting president above the law or not above the law? That was kind of where the interview went after that. So is it your view then that the current president should be held accountable for crimes that he's committing while he was in office or before he was in office? Should he be held responsible for
Yes.
Those? as a sitting president, he should
I do. I do believe that that is the better view, but obviously it's not the only view. Not only is it not the only view, my view in terms of the accountability of the president is not held by the Department of Justice, and that's been the case for now several decades. It's not just the Department of Justice under President Trump. That is the policy. That is the determination, namely, a sitting president cannot be indicted.
Says the Justice Department. Is that settled law, though? I mean, do we know what, in fact, the court would say about this?
We don't.
Okay, so maybe that's still in play. I don't know that that point is exactly what is in play here, but just his thoughts about impeachment I thought were interesting. In fact, obviously he is involved in the Clinton case, so we talked a little bit about the Clinton impeachment versus what might happen to Donald Trump down the road.
It's going to be a daunting challenge for those, especially now the cries from the left, impeach, let's have an election, then as soon as if the Democrats take control of the House, let's bring on the articles of impeachment. I think that is quite dangerous, and it simply is going to further divide the American people.
I don't know if we'll hear the chant again, when Clinton lied, no one died. That was used against George Bush. But I wonder if it is a measure of scale, that is, Clinton's sins were self-inflicted. They were sexual. It was a real estate deal involving $825,000. I mean, really, except that they were wrong, what's the harm here, as opposed to what's being lobbed against the current president, which is the very foundation of our democracy, the integrity of the elections.
But I do think that that's one way of looking at it, but I think that that characterization, and it is a popular characterization, is terribly incomplete. It fails to consider that which we've been talking about, namely the abuse of power, and then just the seriousness of lying under oath, encouraging others to lie, obstructing justice, and otherwise a president of the United States who's contemptuous of the rule of law.
Yeah, it's part of our conversation with Ken Starr. By the way, I just want to play for you one last clip because it kind of jumped out at me, and it was at the very end. Do we have clip five there, Elephant? This is mostly me talking, but I was just a little surprised at the time how much I enjoyed his book and our conversation with him. And at the end of the interview, I felt like I should say as much.
I just know him to be a person of complete honor and integrity.
Read Ken Starr's Contempt, a memoir of the Clinton investigation. And if you're like me, you will come away with, if nothing else, a good feeling about justice in this country and how it works. And it's a nicer and a fuller sort of impression of you, Ken. I've so enjoyed the book and very much enjoyed your time with us today.
Thank you very much. It was a great privilege and pleasure.
What I didn't say was, and I'm just shocked to be able to say those words, because I wasn't anticipating that I'd like the book as much or that we would get along so well. But, you know, you did get the impression when you read the book, maybe when you hear the interview, that this is a guy that was at that moment very interested in meeting out justice. Now, I don't know what this is going to look like starting on TV tomorrow, but that's at least what our conversation was like. 2018, huh, Elif? And the book is called Contempt, a memoir of the Clinton investigation by Ken Starr. It's 11:52 on WGN. Looking back at our Mega Monday morning quiz, I thought there were some pretty good questions in there. I think the toughest one, Don, I don't know how closely you follow high school football, but according to the IHSA, the school with the most football wins in state history is East St. Louis. The first Chicago area school on that list, number two overall, is Mount Carmel. That makes sense. Mount Carmel, powerhouse, the Catholic League. But so too is Joliet Catholic. I'm from Joliet, and I always thought Joliet Catholic won the most games. What I couldn't find was who won the most IHSA state championships. That's got to be a Google click away, but I swear to God I wasn't entering the right words. I was finding all of these other things. So East St. Louis has won the most high school football games in state history, going back to as long as they kept records. East St. Louis. But I'll bet you that Joliet Catholic, the Hilltoppers, have won the most IHSA state championships. And I need somebody to help me out on that. I'm sure there's somebody from Joliet that will be able to answer that for me, or Mount Carmel, if it's, in fact, Mount Carmel. I threw Manuka in there just because that's the high school I went to, and they play really good football at Manuka these days. But the second winningest program in the state is Mount Carmel. But I don't know the answer to the question, who won the most state championships. Clep, you don't know the answer to that, do you?
No, I don't. I do. I did guess Mount Carmel, though, mainly because when I was at Notre Dame High School playing football, that was the school that kept coming up as unbeatable.
Manuka, I know. It's just, well, and that's the way we felt in Will County where I was, in Manuka, because Joliet Catholic was just down the road. And some of the kids in my neighborhood that would have gone to Manuka with me went to Joliet Catholic. That's not new. The Catholic schools a lot of times siphon off some of the great talent for academic reasons, for faith reasons, for athletic reasons. The good kids went to Joliet Catholic to play football. And when that team would come out onto the field, Tom Thayer, just great, who was already like 900 pounds, 6'4", they had full beards, some of these kids. And we did not. The boys at Manuka did not have full beards yet. It was such an intimidating lot of kids. They were so good. I remember Thayer was, I'm pretty sure about this, a fullback on that team. He was probably playing both ways. But they would just give him the ball, and he would just run into those other kids, and there was no hope of stopping him.
What are you going to do?
I know, I know. And when you see a guy coming at you, and there's hair under his chin strap, I would just go, oh, no.
Just cower.
I would just get out of the way. I would just cower. Say, the end zone is right there. I'll show you exactly where it is, sir.
Had that experience at
Olé!
Niles. Yeah, I had that experience at Niles West, too. Rashard Mendenhall and his brother played football there while I was there,
yeah.
And I got ran over a few times by both of those dudes.
We didn't have video technology back then the way they do now, but the coach did take films, and then we would all watch the films on Monday, and he replayed for the team a couple of times an instance where there was a guy coming at me, and I was coming at him, and I knew how this was going to go, and I had no interest in it. So I just kind of made a pantomime effort, and the coach... He stops the tape. And by the way, in retrospect, I think this was a good decision on my part. What with
right.
me needing my brain someday and all. Think about that. The helmets weren't that good. And we didn't know what the hell we were doing. There was no real tackling school for us. So I just kind of let him go on by. He played it back for the. He goes, nice work, Williams. Nice work there. Let's look at that one again.
The tape is so cruel.
It's all I had. It's all I had. Scott, you're on WGN. Hello.
Hey, John.
Hey, what's up?
I believe that when I was in high school, which would have been like 1976, that's when they started the playoffs.
Ah.
Prior to that, it was done by the newspapers, and they decided who was number one.
Oh, what do you know? Yeah. So
I don't know the answer since 76, who has the most championships. But
yes, but the state championships
that,
probably didn't go back.
I remember Evanston and New Trier always fight it out for one and two.
Yeah, right, like a ranking, like they used to do with college football, for instance.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah. Hey, Scott, I appreciate that. That makes sense. It's 11:56. The news is coming up. We'll see what G's got for you, too. G, Suki, let's visit you down the hall. What's coming up on the business lunch?
Well, we're pondering one of life's big questions. When should you retire? How much money do you need? And what state do you think is the very best state to retire in if you're staying in the United States?
That's wow. Those are good questions. And
I
that's
know.
A good, especially that last one, because I think... A lot of people think Florida, there's no income tax down there, but I think Illinois might surprise people.
Really? Where in Illinois? Is there a particular city that you prefer?
I like where I live right now. To be honest with you, I think if you can afford to live in Chicago, there aren't many places better in America to live.
Well, it helps to be a king, I think, you know?